even, for decades and centuries even. We Unitarians and Universalists and now Unitarian Universalists have been trying to hand a gemstone to the world. I have a feeling many of us know this gemstone, which I think goes something like this. We have the right ideas and the right doctrine, even if we don't believe in doctrines. We value the information of science. We are a people of this world where we can see and hear and measure things. And moreover, if everyone would just sit still and listen to us for a little while, they would get all of this too, and everything would be great. Now, the last few decades and centuries even have brought us almost unimaginable strides forward in our understanding of physics and biology and the universe and our world, and it has also shown us how little we truly know. It's a dangerous thing for me to give in a congregation where I have no doubt there are some actual physicists. I know I met a couple of you even. But let me give an example I only begin to understand. I am told, and I'm sure one of you will correct me later, that quantum mechanics shows us that some things about the most basic building blocks of the universe are full of what I would call apparent contradictions. That light is both a wave and a particle, or rather, sometimes it's one and sometimes the other. And let me just quote Albert Einstein and get it out of the way here. He says, "It seems as though we must use sometimes the one theory, that is the particle thing, and sometimes the other, the wave one. While at times we may use either, we are faced with a new kind of difficulty. We have two contradictory pictures of reality. Separately, neither of them fully explains the phenomena of light, but together they do." End quote. So for me at least, this is phenomenally scary, because I'm someone who wants to be right and certain, and if I'm honest about it, I want to know everything. I want to be able to tell you from this pulpit, in fact, something that is true, and not just accurate, but also deeply true. I want to believe that together, perhaps, we can achieve some perfect theology that never offends, but consistently lifts people and all people up. I want to know the things I am doing will have the intended consequences and not a bunch of unpleasant unintended consequences. Again, I want to be right. And what I think Einstein is saying, or others have said in his wake, is that I can't be. I can't know everything because some things change even as I try to know them. And even about the things that don't, I'm wrong more often than I want to think about. And the good acts I do, no matter how hard I try, will also have bad consequences, at least some of the time. In fact, it turns out the very nature of reality conspires against me in my quest to be right. Contradictory pictures of reality, Einstein says. I imagine that this sort of thing kept him up at night. In fact, given that, I hope it rather did. And if we move out of the world of science, I even despair at having an internally consistent theology. Always, there's some issue with the way I and others perhaps see faith or life. And I take refuge in this in some of the words of one of my theology professors, the Reverend Dr. Cynthia Rigby, who I'm going to paraphrase as she sort of paraphrases the theologian Karl Barth. Because otherwise I would have to read you a page and a half, and instead it's just a couple sentences. She said something like, "If you offer a theological system with the aim of achieving certainty, univocity," that is speaking with one voice, "or unequivocalness, you are not speaking about God." And I think our universal translator for this might be, in other words, if you think you truly fully understand this universe, you have no idea what you're talking about. And my question then is, where does that leave us? I think that gemstone that I spoke of is still valuable. The insights of science and sociology and civics and psychology are valuable in our lives and in our world. Our liberal religious tradition has gotten a lot of things right, too, over the years. First, in the wave of abolitionists, I think we were right about universal salvation, if that means anything anyway. Things like self-culture and transcendentalism, our appreciation for religious and secular traditions other than our own. Though again, to point out how difficult it truly is to be right, we could name some prominent failures too, just as easily. We were a part of the temperance movement, which seemed like a great idea at the time until it spawned organized crime. Or a more even darker example, eugenics, which a number of particularly Unitarians were at the forefront of supporting. In more recent years, we could talk about the gems of civil rights and our work on LGBTQI. I can usually do that better, sorry. Issues. Or perhaps the response from many of our congregations, including this one, to the Black Lives Matter movement. In fact, as we've lifted up already, despair this week as we learn of the killings of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge and Philando Castile just outside St. Paul, and then the terrible shooting of police officers Thursday in Dallas. Chris and I have heard a lot about that from our colleagues there. Terrible, awful violence that hurts the cause of peace and love in our world and reminds us that our witness and our work is so desperately needed. So these words that we say today seem so inadequate to the world's pain and its problems. And we say them not because we think they will solve everything, but because we come together in places like this to share and speak and listen, to seek comfort and support to go back out in the world and make a difference. Because we do believe that each of our small parts in making a better world will add up. And moreover, that they can add up to something amazing. So, remember, friends, it is not our words or even our ideas that will make the difference we seek. Over and over, we've handed out these gems, and they have been good, and they have made differences in our world, but they haven't been enough either. Because the true gift, the generous spirit of the woman from our story today, is not these ideas we have had. It is simply this, a faith and conviction to seek out those gems and to give them away, and the fortitude to follow through and make the world we dream about a reality. A spirit that seeks the truth and works to end oppression, and bodies that help make that happen. We have been passing out these gems for a long time. Maybe you've gotten them yourself. Perhaps they are the very reason you are here today, and for that I am glad. They are beautiful and valuable, truly wonderful things. And none are as wonderful as the generous spirit that can give them away. Because that is what we must cultivate, both here in this community and in 1,000 like it across our Unitarian Universalist Association. And that, friends, is our mission in the world. Thank you.
I can remember the exact moment I began to want, to crave a deeper spiritual life. We had lost both of my grandfathers in the span of a few short weeks, one to suicide and the other to Alzheimer's. I was still in shock. I was searching for a way to make meaning out of my life in the face of death. But even through the clouds of my own confusion and pain, I could see that my mother's stepmother, my Grammy, had something special, and whatever that something was helping her through her midnight of the soul. She was the best grandmother a kid could have hoped to have. She'd always make my favorite macaroni casserole when we went over for dinner. She threw epic Easter parties with cupcakes and cookies to decorate and hundreds of eggs to hunt in her award-winning backyard garden. And she was the kind of person you could tell just about anything, because no matter how strange or disappointing it was, she'd receive the news with quiet calm and in her Georgia accent often say in response, "Life sure is interesting, isn't it?" Her grief at losing my grandfather was palpable. It was unmistakable. And yet I sensed within her a strength, a kind of understanding that was deep and wide enough to hold her pain alongside of her ongoing gratitude and zest for life. Bernard Loomer was a process theologian and a late member of this congregation. And he used to call this kind of strength, this kind of deep and wide understanding, spiritual growth, and he used to talk about it in terms of growing the size of our hearts and spirits. He writes, "By size, I mean the capacity of a person's soul, the range and depth of his love, his capacity for relationships. I mean the volume of life you can take into your being and still maintain your integrity and individuality. The intensity and variety of outlook you can entertain in the unity of your being without feeling defensive or insecure. I mean the strength of your spirit to encourage others to become freer in the development of their diversity and their uniqueness. I mean the power to sustain more complex and enriching tensions." This strength, this capacity to feel grief and gratitude simultaneously, this ability to hold the tension between the reality of deep loss and the knowledge that life would go on and that somehow life is still good, These were the things I knew as a teenager I did not have. Things I didn't even have the language at the time to describe, but things I instinctively knew were very, very precious. Now, having been raised a Unitarian Universalist, I took the charge to seek the truth in freedom and love very seriously. And as Reverend Christian preached about a few minutes ago, for a long time, I too interpreted that charge as a sort of assurance that if I just found the right belief system, if I just managed to stumble upon the right ideas, the spiritual resiliency I yearned for would just fall into place. And it took me years to discover that the inner capacity I sought wouldn't come through sheer force of will or by ferreting out the right way to think about things. It needs regular practice. It needs nurture. It needs fellow practitioners to support us along the way. For so long, Unitarian Universalism has been focused in the realm of ideas, often ideas that were not and sometimes still are not embraced or even tolerated in other religious traditions. Ideas like freedom of belief, that there is wisdom in many world religious traditions, that each person is precious and worthy of love. I think these will always shape who we are as a people of faith, but I actually don't think they themselves are our purpose. Rather, they are among our tools of our religious heritage as religious liberals, tools with which we can nurture strong, resilient spirits, tools to help us build lives of resistance against oppression and cynicism, tools to help us build the world we dream about. This shift from engaging liberal religious ideas for their own sake to using our ideas as tools to live deeper, more resilient, and generous inner lives is one that I think our congregations have been grappling with for some time. And as I consider the challenges facing today's and future generations, the shift seems more and more important, more and more defining and missional for our communities to pursue. Because in a country that has lost Trayvon Martin and Eric Garner and Michael Brown and Tamir Rice and Freddie Gray and Sandra Bland and Alton Sterling and Philando Castile and so many other precious people of color to the deadly consequences of systemic white supremacy, it is all too easy just to turn the TV or our news feeds or NPR off and disengage from the reality of the brokenness of the world around us. Here, in this time, in this place, the thing that liberal religious congregations offer that no one else does is a community of people who will support us as we work to grow spirits deep and wide enough to hold our pain alongside of our gratitude, our need for rest and renewal alongside of our need to give life the shape of justice. We need one another to remind us to savor the gifts of the world even as we work to save it. In a world approaching what scientists are describing as a climate crisis, in a country increasingly divided in ideology, in an economy that has left fewer people with the means to financially support themselves, let alone volunteer institutions like churches, and in an internet culture where people can access all of the ideas and information our congregations used to be the only places offering, the thing we can do that no one else can is provide a place where people of all ages, of diverse backgrounds and identities, can grow in the size and resilience and generosity and compassion of their inner selves. And that, I believe, is more precious than any gem. My friend and colleague, the Reverend Victoria Weinstein, minister of our congregation of Greater Lynn, Massachusetts, writes beautifully about how congregations transform lives. Here's some of what she has said. Today, the church is an outsider institution, as it should always have been. It exists to question cultural norms, to help us want the right things, and to hunger and thirst for justice, to make us uncomfortable with the gap between our professed ideals and our actions. It exists to make us new people, the kind of people that others are so drawn to they can't help but ask, "Wow, how did you get trained to be such an amazing human being?" "My church is training me," we would respond. "It's a lot of inner work, a lot of thinking and reflecting and talking with people about how to be, and it's expensive. I give my church a lot of my time and my money, but it is really working a miracle in my life, which feels amazingly freer, richer, more meaningful, deep, and hopeful now than it did before I devoted myself to religious community and practice. If you're interested, I'd love you to be my guest for a Sunday service." We live in a world of incredible beauty, heartbreaking cruelty, crushing injustice, and possibility beyond even our wildest imaginations. We live in a time of social and cultural change and reformation. We are the people we have been waiting for, that our world has been waiting for. This world and these times are calling us to grow hearts and spirits ever bigger and stronger and more resilient, so that we can hold on to gratitude and joy while we work to heal the broken and dismantle systems of oppression. And Christian and I hope to be a part of it all, growing and changing and serving here with all of you. Amen. Our closing Thank you. Our closing hymn today is number 298 in the Gray Hymnal. Let's rise in body or spirit and join together in singing.
Thank you.
Won't you all please join hands for our benediction? Let us go forth from this place with our senses awakened, our spirits lifted, our hearts widened. Our worship has ended, and now our service begins.